American short stories about her new collection, Music for Wartime. And at 11, Patricia Welsh, O.B. Hill, and Emma Jackson Ford host Black Book Talk, a monthly program featuring interviews and discussions of works by African American authors. That is coming up. Thanks for listening to KBOO, and thanks KBOO members for your generous support. If you are not a current member, you can become one by going to kboo.fm and clicking on Donate today. Stick around, we've got Flashpoints right after this.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Portland Rising Film Festival, August 14th and 15th at the Clinton Street Theater in Portland. The Portland Rising Film Festival will spotlight animation, transmedia, feature-length, and short films to highlight the wide range of new media content. Films include Sid Yiddish, The Girl Who Loved Animals, The Shattered Mind, and more. There will also be workshops and presentations to educate and entertain on the art and science of filmmaking. Again, that's the Portland Rising Film Festival, August 14th and 15th at the Clinton Street Theater, 2522 Southeast Clinton Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Today on Flashpoints. In an unprecedented move of censorship, the Los Angeles Times fires its renowned political cartoonist Ted Rall after pressure from the Los Angeles Police Department. Then we take a closer look at the upcoming Republican debates and ask the question, who's going to pay for the 2016 election? Our next story, while their slogan says health, education, and human welfare, the American Psychological Association, better known by its acronym APA, is still reeling from revelations its top membership actively supported a CIA torture program. Finally, we take another look at Syria as reports come in about the first U.S. drone strikes fired from Turkey that are reportedly being used to support CIA-trained rebels on the ground. I'm Kevin Pina, filling in for Dennis Bernstein. All this straight ahead on Flashpoints, your daily investigative news magazine. Stay tuned. And you're listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. Last week, the Los Angeles Times abruptly ended its relationship with longtime political cartoonist Ted Rall. The Times claimed that they fired Rall because they believe a blog post he wrote in May of this year about an incident he had with the Los Angeles Police Department 14 years earlier had been fabricated. Although there is little evidence supporting the LA Times claims, Rall's post describes LAPD officers aggressively throwing him against the wall, handcuffing him, and wrongfully ticketing him for jaywalking. Rall is known in part for his scathing depictions in political cartoons addressing the violence of the Los Angeles Police Department. Ted Rall, welcome to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio.
Thanks for having me.
Well, I also understand that the way in which the Los Angeles Times went about, I don't want to say firing you, but kicking you off their paper was also unprecedented.
Yeah, it was. Not only, you know, they could have just claimed, if they were going to make something up, they could have just said, hey, we don't have any more money. We're dropping our cartoons and you're gone. And that would have been that. I mean, that happens all the time. That's standard. But instead, they basically used the strangest logic. I mean, they claimed that there was a police audio tape that surfaced that was leaked illegally by the LAPD to the LA Times. The LA Times said, okay, this recording proves that everything you said about this jaywalking incident and that you wrote about in your column for us wasn't true. And so, you know, I listened to the tape, and you have about 20 seconds of somewhat audible conversation, followed by about 6 minutes of unintelligible noise, just like traffic noise. You just can't hear. And so they said, well, you know, if here we hear a polite transaction, you know, and we don't hear, you know, this angry crowd you described. We can't tell that you've been handcuffed. And we literally, they actually said this, cannot hear the sound of your driver's license being thrown to the ground as I described. And I don't know what driver's licenses are made of in Nick Goldberg's head, who was the editor who told me this.
Metal, apparently. Steel, apparently.
Yeah, mine doesn't clang. It's paper. So anyway, that was that. And, you know, try as I might, they kept saying, well, this doesn't prove your narrative. I'm like, well, I'm not the one who surfaced this tape that was secretly made by the cop. The cops are. And it doesn't support their narrative either. So, but they just wouldn't hear reason. I mean, it just, logically, if you take yourself out of it, when you listen to that tape, all you've got is a he said, he said. You just can't really tell what's going on. And it's only after they fired me that I took the audio tape to a professional audio processing outfit in L.A., and they were able to clean it up enough that we were able to hear a lot more of what was in the background. And what it revealed was, of course, that I told the exact truth, not like 99% of the truth, 100.0% of the truth. You can hear the cop mixing it up with an angry crowd. You can hear people say, take off his handcuffs, several times. So we know that I was handcuffed. You know that there's an angry crowd. You know that, and you can hear him engaged in snotty banter with the crowd who are yelling at him, even in obscene sexual ways, that making sexual references that I couldn't say here on the air. But it's all online. You can go to anewdomain.net and listen to the tape yourself, both the previously unenhanced version as well as the professionally enhanced version. And I'm willing to send the tape to anybody to have analyzed. Doesn't matter. I'll take a polygraph. The point is, I was absolutely telling the truth. My memory, you know, memories can fail after 14 years, but this time, no, the story was exactly right. The cops totally lied. And at the time, I complained and filed an internal affairs complaint against the officer, Will Durr, which was dismissed. They never bothered to call me or get my side of the story. I guess this is a replay. The LAPD didn't want my side of the story back in 2001 when I was arrested for jaywalking. And now the LA Times is, again, not believing my side of the story because they're taking the cop side. But if you listen to the tape, as millions of Americans have, really everyone can hear it. Everyone agrees that I was telling the truth. Even right-wing bloggers who hate me and all my politics have conceded that I was telling the truth. It's only the LA Times that is continuing to defame me by leaving things as they are, by leaving me fired, by leaving their nuclear option editor's note on their website. I think, frankly, they're just scared and lawyered up, and they're just expecting this to become a lawsuit instead of trying to sit down like reasonable people and admit that they made a mistake and fix it, which isn't really that hard. I mean, you know, newspapers issue retractions all the time. Issue a retraction, issue an apology, take me back. Leave it. Let's just do it that way. I mean, I've proven that they're wrong. They lied about me. They called me a liar. I'm willing to let it go, but they really do have to do the right thing. Otherwise, I'm not going to have any choice other than to sue them because they're ignoring me.
Well, let me remind our listeners, you're listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio, and that's the voice of our guest, Ted Rall. Ted Rall was fired by the Los Angeles Police Department, who claimed that he had miswritten an incident that had happened with the Los Angeles Police Department 14 years earlier. But, Ted, a lot of people believe that the Los Angeles Times really fired you because, quite frankly, your political cartoons really take aim at the violence of the Los Angeles Police Department in a way that nobody else does.
Well, I think it's more accurate to say that the LAPD hated me because of those cartoons. And that's certainly not even a conspiracy theory, because after my firing, the LAPPL, which is the Police Protective League, that's the major police union in LA, posted a blog bragging and gloating over it. Saying that my firing should send a chilling message to all other journalists or reporters who would dare to criticize the police going forward. So this comes from the police or the police union or both. It's pretty savage. I mean, we're talking about, if you think about it, the skullduggery really reflects institutional corruption at the highest levels. You're talking about the leaders, you know, some official of the LAPD meeting with someone at the LA Times, passing stolen evidence that was then modified and tampered in order to expunge evidence that clarified my side of the story, and passed it on to the LA Times, which did not consider my point of view, considered me guilty till proven innocent, even though, in fact, I was 100% innocent, and now is refusing to take it back. Now, I have to think.
But I want our listeners to also understand about the kinds of political cartoons that you aimed at the LAPD, and about the LAPD as an institution itself and its involvement in violence and corruption outside of what happened to you.
Well, that's certainly true. I mean, yeah, I've drawn dozens of cartoons. Well, I mean, I'd have to count them up. I mean, at least 20, maybe 30, maybe 40, somewhere in that vein. I'm going to guess about 30 cartoons specifically directed at the LAPD over the last 6 years, and some accompanying blog posts to go with it. And I've also done anti-LAPD cartoons for the Pasadena Weekly. And look, it's not like I'm picking on the LAPD. They just happen to be one of the most corrupt, disgusting, violent institutions in the United States. And you know, by doing what they've just done,
and you wonder why they came after you.
I don't care. You know, I mean, like, bring it on. I mean, I would do it all over again. I mean, I don't care what they think. I didn't become a political cartoonist to play it safe. If I wanted to do that, I could have stayed in banking. This is a job where if you do it right, you take no prisoners and you go after people who are oppressors and who are violent and who are hurting innocent people, and that's the LAPD, if it's anyone. So I don't mind. But I have to say, I really want to clarify the fact that this is a level of institutional corruption at just the high. That's just kind of almost, you know, we're almost talking about racketeering, because you're essentially, the cops have fired a journalist.
They're colluding, right? They're colluding with the Los Angeles Times to shut you up.
And let's be clear here. Normally, I don't get into these money trail things. I don't really understand them, or I don't really believe that money always explains everything. But in this particular case, it's hard to ignore the fact that the LAPPL has tens of millions of dollars. They're deeply invested in their pension, through their pension fund, in the parent company of the LA Times, Tribune Publishing. And so when the LAPD calls the LA Times, they're not just the police, which would make them influential. They're the boss. They're the owners. I mean, they are the boss of the editor-in-chief and of the publisher. The publisher reports to the LAPPL.
Wow.
So it's, it's kind of astonishing. There really should be a conflict of interest law that prohibits ownership of a media institution by an entity like a police union pension fund.
That's amazing. And you're listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. That's the voice of our guest, Ted Rall. Ted Rall was fired by the Los Angeles PD, is the case that we're making here, right? That may have been misspoken, but
it's
truthful.
In fact, it was certainly at their behest. Look, let's just put this really in perspective. Let's just stipulate for a second here that I was a total liar, that I made up this little incident, right, back in 2001. All lie. I made it up. Still, it would still have to disturb you that the LAPD would dig into their files, find a 14-year-old jaywalking ticket. Tell me how many police departments have 14-year-old records on ordinary citizens. I'm willing to bet that they only have them on politically notable people. Just a hunch. And they dig this thing up, and they slide it over to the Times because I'm annoying them. I mean, so even if I were a liar, that would be bad. It would not be good for the public. It would be pretty scary to think of that kind of influence over the media. But then add to the fact that once it's brought to their attention, and it was brought to their attention last Thursday when the new enhanced tape was released, and it showed the woman saying, take off his handcuffs, screaming, thank God for her, thank God for her. If I hadn't been able to find that, I wouldn't be able to have this conversation with you right now. I'd just be hiding out, like Jason Blair or Stephen Glass. This is uncharted territory, because usually when a journalist is disgraced and accused of lying, they're not able to, you know, usually they're guilty. They're not able to vindicate themselves. But in this particular case, here I am, proven completely right. And, you know, the LA Times doesn't have the guts, the decency, the integrity to just step forward and admit it. And you know why that is? That's because they can't because that's going to expose the LAPD. Because if they, the only way they can get out of the situation legally is to blame the LAPD and say, well, we were duped. The LAPD lied to us. They sent us a doctored tape and that tried to erase what Mr. Rawl was saying. So then they have to investigate the LAPD. They can't investigate themselves. That's what they'd be doing. So that's why these guys are hunkered down.
Unbelievable story. Well, Ted, you have convinced me. I also believe that you have convinced most of our listeners. If we want to continue following this and we want to hear that tape again, tell us where to go.
Best place is to go to anewdomain.net, not .com, .net, anewdomain.net. That's where I've been posting. There's been a lot of coverage by me and by other staffers about this, and it's just going to be ongoing. I think it's going to really blow up in the next day or two.
Well, thank you so much for joining us. We're going to keep abreast of this, and we're going to have you back on, Ted. We're going to see where this goes.
Thank you.
Our pleasure. That's the voice of Ted Rawl, our guest today on Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. And now we're going to take a short break, and when we get back, we're going to talk about campaign financing and the presidential elections of 2016. Stay tuned. We'll be right back. And you're listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. With the field of candidates widening for both the Republican and Democratic races for the nomination for the presidency, it seems only fitting that we start to take an early look at campaign financing. The last time we elected a president, it cost the candidates nearly $2 billion to compete for the highest office in the land. Joining us now is Paul Jorgensen, an assistant professor at the University of Texas, Pan American, who's written extensively about how big money affects election outcomes. Paul Jorgensen, welcome to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio.
Thanks for having me.
Well, you know, Paul, I was just looking over these charts here, and a couple of figures have already come out about campaign financing and who's raised what.